Welcome to another edition of the Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 98. This is Tyler Yonke, joined again with Chris Flower. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Well, I'm a little under the weather, right. But we're gonna talk bike racing, so I'm here for it.
You're gonna brave through it,
right?
What a trooper,
right? So we're both of the DDA team, and just so you know, we haven't had any issues with Grind Fondo that Quickstep was dealing with down in Grind Fondo. I think that's what I'm going to call it, the Grind Fondo gate.
That's a good one. I like it.
So quickly, we're going to talk about Woods Import, Quickstep debacle, Amgen Tour California, Cal Aggie results and breakdown, things make you go, some coming up Folsom bump, and some winners and losers. So you ready for this, Chris?
I certainly am as ready as I can be.
Let's just get back into, once again, we don't have Kurt with us, lamenting the fact that he is failing to show.
I think he's like saving up all of his energy for the 100th show. That's right. My hope.
98 here, so we're coming up. We got Folsom. We'll probably do a breakdown of that and maybe the bump, afterwards next week. So right. A week or two. Depends. Last week, tell me what you think of this. So I tried to do a little preview show on Friday night. Live stream, and just to try to get some people to join in, and I don't know if anybody joined in. As a matter of fact, no one joined in on the chat. I could say that, but the idea was, let's do a quick 15 minutes, just go rundown of what's coming up. Maybe some people are jacked up for the race. Do you think I should continue doing that? What do you think?
I think it was good. I think the challenge was that you did the live stream on YouTube,
right,
and then kicked it over to Facebook, and I saw it on Facebook, and it wasn't clear that when it made its way to Facebook, it wasn't live. And I think a couple other people had that issue as well, because they had sent you some comments, were like, oh, you didn't respond to me while I was talking to you, and they didn't realize it had been previously recorded.
Right. So just and I appreciate you bringing that. So just a quick thing on that is, so the problem you have is you can post a video on Facebook and it says new premiere. And so what it does is as soon as it loads, it starts playing it so people can join in as it plays. So they join midstream. It's not like it starts. And then once it does that new premiere, so it's as if it's live, even though it wasn't.
Right.
So it gave that. Yeah, because I was texting you and you're like, wait, I'm watching you live. So anyway, that's what we have. So we'll try to I don't know. The point is, maybe we'll do that, maybe we won't.
I think this week will be a bit of a challenge because the preview is usually based on kind of sizing up the field. And with the weather this week, the pre-reg field is a little difficult to really dive into.
It is, but it is a goal of some to do. And I'm a little under the weather, so probably it may or may not happen. So what we'll do is I have the options. Maybe we get some feedback here of what do you prefer? You want me to do it on YouTube? You can join there, or maybe Facebook. Facebook might be the better avenue for that right now. Who knows? Okay. Let's get right into this. So Woods and Port, they were down there kind of head. And I say those two because it's kind of, I just kind of want to talk about the one situation that they had. We'll go over some World Tour stuff. Then we'll break down into the Cal Aggie results. So stay tuned for that. This is a little tease. But the Jayco Herald Sun Tour. So what? There are 3-4 stages in. There was a little bit of climby stage so that you got Woods and Port kind of take the lead. I think 20K to go. Woods hit it hard up this climb and it was gravel. Port was able to kind of hang on, distance him a little on the descent, I guess. Woods caught up. I mean, Port caught up to him and then they kept it out and Woods won the field sprint. Now, you had mentioned that Port kind of sounded like he was complaining about it.
Yeah, his comments just seemed a little dismissive. So I guess when Port had caught up with Woods on the descent, they chatted briefly and said, hey, we got a gap. Let's just work together until the last K and see what happens. So they worked apparently really well together to get to the finish. And then once they got to 1K to go, Port said that Woods just sat on him for the last K and then sprinted around him. His comment seemed like it was an unsporting move by Woods, but they had an agreement that they would work together till 1K, and Woods is interested in getting a win, so it makes sense for him to save his legs for the sprint. Port's comment was just kind of like, oh, I guess he deserved to win, but he sat on for the last K or something. So his comment just seemed a little snide.
Right, so I take it as Woods obviously wants to win, so this is a big deal for him.
Right.
So he's doing what he can, but yet to keep away, and you know, he gets the yellow jersey as well. Also sounded like he had the big move and did all the work kind of up the climb. Porter right. was trying to hang on.
Yeah.
So okay, so you have that. And then you have the descent. He's railing the descent. Port catches up on that. But it made it sound like there was some work to be done for there as well. So you kidding? You didn't work in the last 1K? Sounds genius.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what you do. And then I did see the sprint, and it wasn't very close.
I wouldn't think so. I mean,
no.
Woods has got some good pops.
Maybe
so.
That's what Port was more upset about, that it looked made him look even worse than he. I don't know. So what do you think of that? How long does that race go? Does it go to the weekend? Do you know?
There's two more stages. So they've done three stages. Dan McClay won the first stage, field sprint. So Cannondale, or whatever they're called, Drapac Education First. I don't know. They've had a good set of stages there. But there's two more stages, so figure today and tomorrow.
Okay.
And then all it wraps right. up.
So it looks like Kenny Elizondo is in like third. So he's a little deeper back, like 20-some mm-hmm. seconds. So it's maybe a dog race between the two up front.
Yeah, I don't know what the last two stages
look like. I know there's another climbing.
Is there? Yeah. Okay. So maybe there's an opportunity to get a Port and Woods redo or something.
Right. Yeah, maybe fun.
We'll see.
Okay. So then there's that race. Then there's the one down in San Juan. And that's the one where Quick Step seems to come to the fore. Gaviria wins some stages. You got Alaphilippe down there winning stages. Their new guy, excuse me, I'm forgetting his name.
Remco?
Yes. He was third, I think, in the TT.
Yeah.
Really ripped it. Pretty impressive. That's the one I think Guymon won a stage on a few years ago.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of tough to get footage. Yeah, that's right. Because it's always interesting if you watch the sprint footage. It's like some guy holding a camcorder at the start finish line, and he's sitting there, and there's people just out in the road, like in front right. of him, hoping yeah. to. And it's a full on sprint.
Yeah, and the like officials are on dirt bikes, and it's an interesting scene. That's for sure.
It is, and it's always fun. But anyway, another little issue that happened down there. I don't know if you want to kind of take this and. Give us a breakdown of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I can dig into it a little bit. So I'm assuming this happened before the race officially started, or was it after stage one? I'm not sure. But it sounds like the Quick Step team decided they would take a photo with one of the local people who waitress at a restaurant. And I guess Ilio Keys, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
Kind of took it upon himself sure. to stand behind the waitress and kind of make a... inappropriate gesture. Once that photo got out, it was pretty poorly received. Apparently the waitress reported it to the local authorities. They issued him like the equivalent of an $80 fine, and there was a little bit of turmoil in social media. Some folks wanted Quick Step to pull him out of the race. Other people wanted the race to expel him from the race, and in the end he ended up getting kicked out of the race by the officials. And that response was poorly received by Patrick Lefebvre, the DS for Quick Step. And he did a lot of griping about it, saying, oh, I'm going to take the whole team out. This is ridiculous. And then the next day, Quick Step skipped the podium presentation, citing fatigue. But obviously, it was a form of protest to their treatment of their rider. And then it got interesting because a lot of folks called on, I'm not sure how to pronounce their new sponsor's name.
Dusunik?
I'll run with that. To kind of step to the forefront and do something about it. And the next day there was a collective apology from the team for their behavior, including the domestic sportif. And then since then, it sounds like other sponsors have come forward and they've asked them to, you know, learn from their behavior and not have a repeat. Specialized issued a statement today saying, you know, this is unacceptable. You need to take responsibility for your actions. And it's just kind of, you know, it's a blight on the sport to some degree, because it's a developing area where folks are getting interested in racing, and this is kind of the lead story for the whole race. It's not that Gaviria is killing sprints or that Alaphilippe is killing the kind of punchy climbs in the TT. It's
or that you have a 19-year-old, you know,
right
up there in the top,
right, with Evenepoel. So it's definitely unfortunate. And
So my interest. Okay, so one, she reported to the police because evidently he made physical contact with her. It wasn't just right. that he was, you know, behind her making like he was, you know, Night at the Roxbury. Right. He was physically making contact. Which, come on, you're in your Lycra. I mean, maybe you shouldn't. I don't know.
That's not a good look.
It's not a good look. Yeah. No. So anyway, that's what happened with that. But then the weird reaction from the team was to blame the woman that she was, you know, out for money.
Right.
And, you know, you got a brand new sponsor involved. And what really interesting is, I think this shows with the management with Lefevre, is I saw Jonathan Vodder said today that he goes, I got a really sweet tweet message from Ilio Keese, you know, basically showing contrition, but asking for advice about how to go forward. Vodders is part of EF.
Right. Different guy, team.
Right. Different team. But he's reaching out to Vodders for some like dad management type of advice. Does that say anything about the Grindfondo team? I mean,
right.
Their leadership. I think this issue, you know, guys make mistakes. I mean, first of all, you're an adult, you're professional. Could you imagine with your job, you're out at a conference and someone's going to take a picture and you grab some barista and start doing that? You're not going to do that.
Right.
I mean, so this is a weird, you know, I don't know if it's athletics guys do this, but so that was weird in the first thing, you know, be professional. And you're making a lot of money, you've got sponsors and your sponsors thrown into this. But the reaction from the DS was just odd.
It was, like you said, it was a lot of victim blaming and, oh, she's just looking for money. And her response to that was, I don't need your money. This just isn't right.
Right.
And even with that, it seemed like.
And I bet it could have gone away pretty good if the team would have tried contrition.
Right.
And because it seems like he's like devastated by this. So.
Right. Yeah. It definitely wasn't handled well. Like the PR guy must have been on vacation this week or something.
No. Do you think that would have happened with Sky?
I don't think so. I think Brailsford he's a stern guy, but I think he would know how to handle that PR fiasco a little better.
Although, you know, Moscon, I mean, that's kind of a thing that they always have to deal with. So.
Right.
I mean, he's not doing that. But.
No, that's true. But it seems like even with Moscon, they at least kind of make it sound like they're going to penalize him. With Keese, it was just kind of like, oh, what happened to him was unfair. It's like, well, not really.
No.
So.
Yeah, it seems odd. And like, you know, look, it's what it is. You know, hope these guys learn from this and move on. Cyclocross, you heard that they got a new venue for what year?
I guess 2022 announcement was made today that they're going to be going to host the World Cyclocross Championship in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Fayetteville, I believe.
Okay. Because when you think of cyclocross.
I think of Arkansas.
Right. But, you know, they did have the World's, was it Indiana? No, where was it a few years ago that they had?
Kentucky?
Kentucky, yeah, something. I don't know. Yeah. Someone want to?
Louisville,
I don't know. I'm just saying yes on whatever you're coming up. It was somewhere like that. And so, you know, you think of crowds and those are kind of places to get worlds. But, you know, I guess you only need a decent enough, you know, when the Worlds was at Richmond, you know, right. They said that it was an amazing venue. So you got to get enough crowd for that. So it looks good on TV. And I don't know that Arkansas brings that, but maybe you'll get enough U.S. people.
And I don't know. I don't follow cyclocross enough to know what kind of the lead in to a world's event includes. Like if you think about Richmond, teams were there weeks in advance, acclimating to the time change, acclimating to the weather,
elevation,
all that elevation, those extra 30 feet. I don't know if it's the same with cross, if there's as much need, because the races are obviously shorter and you're only doing one race. So maybe they just kind of fly in a couple days before, do some course recon and race, or if there's going to be a longer stay. If there's a longer stay and it brings in bigger crowds, that's great for the local economy, and hopefully it spurs some interest in cyclocross.
But you always wonder how much the local government paid to get this too, though. I mean,
that's true.
Okay, so anyway, that's that. We'll probably keep you abreast in 2022. So we've got
episode 400.
Right.
Ooh. Tune in.
Right. Tune in for that. Amgen Tour California, the routes specifically, you know, we knew the host cities, but the routes have been released. So you did a little looking at all of them. I know there's been write up online. It is always interesting to kind of see, you know, we kind of knew where some of these routes were going to go.
Right.
And then I was reading a Velo News one, and I was trying to I think stage three, and we'll get to that one here, Stockton to Morgan Hill, where they basically say, oh, it's just a flat sprinter stage. Well, they do an HC climb over Mount Hamilton.
Right.
And then after that, that's the one where Scoynes went down.
Yeah.
And it goes right down Quimby again and then up to take a little bit different up to Morgan Morgan Hill. Let's get into that. So why don't we start with stage one? You can go through each one of those. And it's especially interesting for us to see the local so we know intimately on those.
Yeah. So really kind of the local ones that are around us are going to be stages one, two, and kind of sort of three. So stage one. It's a sack to sack loop. They go out up along the Sacramento River, cut over toward Woodland, down to Winters, and then back around to Woodland, and then they come back to Sac and do that usual six turn circuit that they do around the Capitol. I think they do three loops around that and set up for a sprint finish. So,
any chance of going over Cantilo?
It didn't look like it. It looked like they just kind of breezed through town. There's a sprint point in Winters, and then they head back towards Sac. So one of the things that I notice when they do the Amgen routes locally is they really just stick to major roads. They never really seem to jump into the offshoot roads that most cyclists use. Like they use Green Valley instead of Malcolm Dixon and right. Deer Valley and stuff like that. So it's cool to see them, but they're never really on the same climbs that we're usually on.
Right. They did use from 49 was the road a few years ago when they came through El Dorado Hills that we use.
Oh, Salmon Falls?
Yeah, Salmon
yeah.
Falls.
Yeah, that's true.
But you're right. For the most part, I mean, they do White Rock.
Right.
I mean, that's the Thanksgiving Day ride. So it's all true. You, I almost used the word losers. All easy. You people who do the Thanksgiving Day ride, that's your chance to compare your KOMs to the Tour of California. Okay.
That's true.
So
that's stage one, figure sprint, unless there's some crazy wind action that blows everything apart.
Yeah, the teams will work for that because they're only going to have so many sprint days.
Stage two is downtown Rancho Cordova, which looks like maybe City Hall. I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
Up to South Lake Tahoe. So really, it's kind of a repeat of last year's stage that started in Folsom, except we're starting in Rancho. They'll go up White Rock and then cut over to Green Valley using, what is that, Silva Valley. So they'll go past Town Center, bike shop and whatnot there. And instead of going down into Nevada through Gardnerville and back up, what's the grade on the backside there?
Oh, the last time that was coming up through the Nevada side.
Kingsburg?
Yeah.
Kingsbury Burger. Right. So they're skipping that and they're going to cut up Luther Pass and then come in through South Lake from the south side. And it looks like they're finishing at Heavenly again.
Yeah. So there's a kick up to Heavenly, just minor, but it makes you wonder if it's going to be I don't see it as decisive. As a matter of fact, that break that was away last year, that's going to stick this time, I would say.
Right. I would think so. I mean, Luther Pass isn't super easy. I think they categorize it as a either a category two or three climb. So it's not incredibly easy, but it might be enough to kind of burn some legs up before getting into the finish.
Right. I think so. It's just not as dramatic. I mean, last year was the decisive stage over, the one down south, the climbing. Which one was that?
Gibraltar.
Again? Gibraltar. Thank you. And then the TT. So those kind of equaled things out for Bernal and TJ. Yeah. And then that's when shattered him. So
yeah, those were Bernal just let loose.
All right, so the next one I think is a great chance for a breakaway because we've seen that happen quite the last few times Stockton to Morgan Hill. They go Patterson Pass, Mines Road, and then Hamilton, of course.
Right, yeah. And
up to the observatory and down.
It just seems like with Hamilton being an HC climb, it's inevitable that things are going to break up and you're going to have smaller groups getting over the top of that together. And depending on how the group looks relative to who's in a potential breakaway, will the field try and pull them back? Because instead of finishing in San Jose, they're finishing in Morgan Hill, so they'll have a little more time to reel somebody back in.
But even with that, when they finished, was Bennett. When Bennett won, that was the decisive stage. They got up the road, decent amount of climbers, and they ended up staying away, and then that was kind of it for the rest of the race.
Right.
He had to TT and whatnot, but that gave them the gap. You go over Hamilton, and then you got to do Quimby. There's that climb back up to it, and then that punch down. I mean, that's, you got to be on it, and I don't think it's a sprinter's day for that. You're going to drop enough, but it's, the sprint, the breakaway could stay. Anyway.
Right. It might be a situation where you kind of have you know, a sprinter that can climb decently well. So not a, like right. a pure Cavendish right. Kittle type sprint.
Well, that's why Scoins, you know, that was right. a good day for him. He was hanging in the break and then could do well.
Yeah.
Or go down off a snake or whatever he hit there. Okay, stage four.
Stage four is going to be kind of the big scenic day, I think, for the race this year. So they're going Laguna Seca to Morro Bay along Highway 1. So it'll be a couple miles of getting out of the Salinas Valley, Laguna Seca area, and then just hit Highway 1. Really, there's just going to be a few little climbs on the way down, like Hurricane Point, I think, is a Cat 3, and there's another Cat 3 on the way down, and they'll do a little loop in Morro Bay, and it looks like they're going to finish on kind of a little uphill drag race sprint like they've done in the past. So I think Sagan won in, I don't know if it was Morro Bay or Pismo Beach one year, and it was a similar type of sprint. So it'll probably be a day where if a breakaway doesn't stay away, then I think it'll be a good sprint for somebody like Sagan if he's here. Because I think when they did a stage similar to this a few years ago, one of the, I think it was still Rally back then, one of the Rally guys won in a breakaway.
Oh, well, there was Huffman and then Britton. And I think they went like
it
one.
Was before that.
You think so?
Yeah. He's now retired. I forget his name. I'll have to look him up while we're in the background here. But yeah, it's...
So this is kind of a reversal of the stage last year.
Yes.
With Scoins once yeah. again.
Right.
Okay. Stage five, Pismo to Ventura.
Yeah, so this one doesn't go along the coast. It cuts along the ridgeline kind of behind Santa Barbara. And you'll probably get some interesting scenery of the fires that rolled through year before last. Looks like there's a couple Cat 3 climbs along the way and then should probably settle in for... potentially a sprint finish if everybody stays together over those climbs.
And of course, it all depends on what's kind of happened before in these stages to see how much is broken up, to see, you know, who sprinters, like let's say something weird happens on stage one and a sprinter doesn't win.
Right.
Well, even so, those sprinters only have their few days. They're going to, you know, try to break yeah. these down.
There is a Cat 1 climb in there, so that might be an opportunity for some guys to try and launch some kind of a move, but again,
yeah, but we've seen sprinters here before that aren't your, some of them are your pure, you know, Cavendish sprinters. And then some of those guys, like Gaviria, as an example, gets over those things right. a little better. So.
And you don't have the, you know, no offense to the quality of the field, but you're not going to have the best of the best climbers out there either. You know, you're not going to have Froome and Thomas.
Tell that to Bernal.
That's true. He'll be at the Giro. So.
Right, so it's not going to happen. Stage six, big one. So
this is Granddaddy. the queen stage, if you will, yeah. Of the tour this year. So they're doing Ontario to Baldy, and it's kind of the same route they've done in the past where they do the Glendora Mountain Road loop before actually tackling Baldy. So they do a Cat 1 climb, loop around, hit that same Cat 1 climb again, and then go up to the top of Baldy. So this will be the make or break stage for anybody that's got climbing ability and wants to stake their claim on the GC.
Right. And then last day is just kind of a, I mean, it's a little, is it a little punchy? Some loops?
It looks like it. I would assume it stays together, though. It doesn't look like there's anything that's going to create separation.
So let me ask you this. When I see a race like this, which is only 7 days,
right.
and you have the last day, which is kind of a, I see it as the way they have it here is almost like a promenade. You're not going to really change things up.
Right.
The thing you've seen before is like when Sagan was there, he was able to get a sprint points or sprint times, bonus time. To seal the victory, because I right. think at Baldy he was just very behind when yeah. he won that. I'm kind of disappointed. It's only seven. It's not the tour. You don't need, you know, the promenade day. I mean, no, they're going to be full on racing, but it's. I'd like to see him. A Baldy would be a fun day for the last one.
Yeah, I would think so.
And I think this probably caters more to VIPs and those kind of things.
Right. I would think so, especially with the way it finishes. So they come down into Pasadena and do a bunch of loops around the Rose Bowl. So there's going to be opportunity for folks to watch the closing circuits there. So yeah, definitely more of a promenade type finish.
All right. Any last things on the men's race?
I think it's, you know, it's a cool series of stages. I think for the organizers, it was a safe approach. I mean, you're hitting all the highlights of previous editions of the race. You're hitting Tahoe, you're hitting Hamilton, you're hitting Baldy, and it's, you know, there's really nothing new. There's some new host cities and some new finish cities, but outside of that, it's really kind of a safe approach, I would say.
All right. And you said something like they should add Fish Rock?
I'm just saying it'd be cool.
You're kind of on Fish Rock right there.
In the future, if they were to to expand a little bit. They've gone as far north as Santa Rosa, and they've hit like Kings Ridge, but it'd be cool to see some of that stuff make its way back in
right.
on a more regular basis.
I agree. What about the women's race? So women's, they have three stages, and they've added Mount Baldy. So you've got Ventura to Ventura. It's probably going to be similar to we saw Elk Grove last year. They're out there with the men, but I don't think they get a ton of climbing on that day.
They hit some Cat 2 and Cat 3 climbs, so they'll have some climbing. It looks like it's like a 70-mile stage, and it'll be a challenge.
The Baldy one, they share the last 20 miles of the men, which is what we had predicted when the route came out.
Right.
Obviously, a big day there.
Yes.
Huge climb. Pretty excited for that one for the women, just like the up at Heavenly, because that tore it apart. But it also... You get a spotlight, some amazing riding, and that's going to be pretty awesome to do as well.
Right.
Then Santa Clarita to Pasadena, same as the men. They only get one lap around the Rose Bowl. I mean, that's one? Come on. Anyway, longest race, you say, in Amjohn history for the women, 177 miles, 20,800 feet of climbing.
Right. So definitely the biggest one they've taken on.
Right. So you've done, you know, when you did your, what was that Zwift thing you were, not Zwift, it was Strava.
Oh.
And you did the ride out there to Winters, just like the Amgen. So.
It's very similar. I'm sure I was going just as quick.
Well, you know, you'll get a... we'll talk to you specifically that day just to get your insights on the personal aspects of that.
I like it.
Anything else on the race and kind of your... And Katie Hall might not be racing, by the way.
Oh, really?
Sure, okay. She was in Bulls Dolman. She hadn't said if she was going to do it.
So stage four of the 2014 tour... Amgen Tour, Will Routley won.
Will, oh, there you go.
In a small break from that day it was Monterey to Pismo Beach or Morro Bay or something like that.
He, side note, won Chico.
Yes.
I think he and his wife, she was a cyclist as well, they do kombucha up in Canada now.
They do. British Columbia, I believe. Right. Yeah.
Side note. So if anybody ever wanted to know about that, Google him. Maybe you can buy your kombucha from Will. That's all I got. What about, you want to talk about Cal Agi?
We can, yeah.
Everyone showed up for this podcast to hear about Cal Agi.
That's the big thing. Nobody cares about the Amgen.
Big thing, big start of the year. We showed up there. You, Kurt, and myself, we decided we're going to do make it a big day of training. And it's also just presets us an excuse for anytime you do bad.
Yes.
So we went and started out Coffee Republic at 9 o'clock in the morning, did... I don't know, 30 miles of that or so. Went down and then did the Masters 35 and the P1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know how many they include.
It was an everybody race.
An everybody race, free for all. So that's what we did. So why don't we, you want to talk about, we could do some categories here that we were not involved, but we got to kind of our teammates and stuff. So start with the men's Cat 3s. we had a, and on our Facebook page and stuff, we also, in our YouTube, we put out some videos because we had cameras on our bikes this weekend. So we were able to get some last lap exploits from Jeff Scott, teammate here, showing Ryan Kaepernick, who ends up getting the win. He does a little, takes off in the back section with a kind of the crosswalk area right before the last turn.
Yeah.
And stuck it. I mean, he got away and then held up. And he did the very, very bold thing of not looking back, posting up well before the line. And
it's brave.
it's a beautiful picture if you can pull it off, and horrible if it goes wrong. So congratulations to him. Jonah Kellogg gets the field sprint with Aaron Marchand of Folsom Bikes, and Jeff Scott, our other teammate, getting third in the field sprint. So he was fourth overall there. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a good result for Ryan and Jeff.
Right. What else we got here? Let's just go through some of these. We'll just give you the breakdown of some. We don't know much about the racing, so.
So one thing that was good to see, though, just before diving in more results, right, is just the amount of juniors and the amount of 4-5 racers.
I mentioned that on the preview show.
You did, yes. But I mean, there were 52 guys in the Cat 4-5 race.
Right.
That's great. I haven't seen numbers like that in a long time.
Right. So there's a guy who's joined us on our YouTube channel, and I'm not sure who exactly it is. Maybe he can tell us his name, but Hunting Sith is his acronym there, or his name on there, but I don't really know who that is. he went out there and he joined in and just made some comments that he had was going to go out and do some. He's new to racing.
Okay.
And I just thought about this. So I just want to throw this in as some comments. He and Grafath had been kind of talking about doping stuff.
Oh.
So he had made one last comment. He's like, as many of your guests have been racing a long time, how many times have the average amateur racer been tested over the past 10 years? And I think you are probably, your number is probably exactly what everyone else's is. And what is that?
Is that zero?
Right. That's what your average testing. So I hope you're asking this just because you're interested and not to set a plan in
place right.
of like, oh, I could do whatever. But, you know, that's a very interesting thing. When you come to the sport, the testing is all over the, you know, they do it at nationals. They'll do some random stuff here and there. If there's a suspicion and someone wants to call you out, you may have someone visit your house. So right. If they're visiting your house, there's two reasons. One is there's a suspicion that you're probably doping, or it could take it as a badge of honor of like, I'm beating everyone to the point that they think I'm testing. So,
or you may have participated in the Giro de Miami, because that right. seems to be the hot spot for popping.
Right. And we'll have to break that one down at some point too. So anyway, thanks for your questions. We got a lot of good feedback this week on all our videos. The Cat 3-4, Jonah Kellogg wins that outright over Aiden Malmberg of the Cycle Sport and Pete Kurland of the Olympic Club, Jeremy Pond, fourth place. Jeremy, Rockland. He's a guy that does Wednesday rides with us. So
yes.
I think he's good for him.
Yeah.
Charles Halbert down there in sixth, and he ends up winning two of the four races, I think, as well. Right. So he had a good, we'll just go right to the Cat 4s. You want to go on those?
Yeah. So like I said, Charles Halbert, he took the win in the Cat 4. Nate Pearson, I believe he's with Trainer Road, got right. second. And then Charles Weaver with Velo Reno coming in for third place. And Jeremy Pond sitting there in fourth place again. He's doesn't have a team listed. I think he's associated with Limitless though.
Right. So I was just saying about Nate Pearson. I listened to the Trainer Road podcast, and you know, they had cameras on his bike, and he did like three races, I think, that day.
Yeah.
Got second. I think he was sixth or seventh in the Masters 35, and then right. another four. He was like six or so, talking about how he sprints seated. I guess it was pretty close between him and Chaz Halbert, but maybe take a look at that. He'll probably be posting out his videos files as well. So if you want to kind of look and see how, if you were in the race and wanted to see how that went as well. But Chaz Halbert won that one.
That's the 4-5.
And then he won the 4-5s as well. Right. So Nate Pearson gets third in that. Yupeng Zhang of Davis gets second. And once again, Jeremy Pond up there. So these guys are all getting their points for the weekend.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of good opportunities there for riders to get some racing in.
Interesting how we have a Cat 3, Cat 3, 4, Cat 4, Cat 4, 5. I mean, Masters 1, 2, 3, 4. 35, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, if you're a 4, you had a chance of just going all. And if you're 35 and
right.
in a 4, you want to do the 5s? Do you have that?
Yeah, so Cat 5s. First off, it's just good to see there's 44 people entered in the race. Michael Donahue from Mill Valley took the win. Max Colley from Castaic, second place. And Damian Hayes in third place there. One of the things that's kind of interesting to see is, you know, the top 10 riders, top 9 riders, nobody's associated with a team, so a lot of genuinely new people to racing, which is kind of cool this time of year.
Right.
So hopefully they get the racing bug and stick with it.
Yeah, really, really good. Really excited about that. And then let's go to the juniors real quick. You know, them, it's kind of difficult because there's a lot of different age categories. You know, it's 9 to 14 here. And Nolan Areno wins in the 9 to 14. Massimo Morson of the Team Swift in second. And Chantel Tupaz of the CBRE team in third.
So Nolan, he comes out. He's a local guy to Folsom. So he comes out on the Tuesday night ride, gotcha. And occasionally jumps in on like a portion of the Coffee Republic ride. So he's definitely getting some experience, getting pushed around by bigger guys. So
and then a good racer. The junior 15-18, Jonah Kellogg wins that again. Team Swift with his teammate Alex Atkins in second, and Finn Thompson of the Davis Bike Club in third. Just a thing out to Jonah, time to start jumping in those P123 races, you know, just saying. The junior's good, glad you're representing him there, but, you know, you're a really good racer. And I think last year he did the 1-2-3 in the Folsom. So.
He did, yeah. Yeah.
You want to do the next one for
yeah,
us?
Yeah, the next one I think was the biggest race of the day. men's 35 plus 1-2-3-4. So this is the race I think we as a team targeted heaviest on the day. We had 6 riders of the, I don't know, we'll say 45 in the race. We have some onboard footage from Jeff's perspective. I think you've got some footage from your perspective.
I've not released it yet.
Okay.
There's only one, and we can talk about that. There's only one part of that video that would be interesting for mine, and that's when the Nate Pearson, Josh Carley, and them drove to the break. When I caught that on there.
Yeah. So break gets away in this race, maybe 20 minutes in, ultimately becomes a 12-man break, and we've got good numbers up there with John Novikoff and Jeff Scott, who ultimately go 1-3 in the finish. Alex Holtz got kind of edged out by, looks like maybe a tire width, by John in the sprint. So Alex Holtz from Touchstone holding off second place there.
Yeah, that was, and you can check out their videos for that as well. One is we heard that John won, very excited, and then you look at the video and I'm like, are you sure he won? I mean, very impressed. And Brian Zimney was in the break too, and he put out a video, and you can see from he's like, look, you got Josh Carling up here, who is a renowned sprinter in our area. I'm going to get on his, the wheel to go on, right? So he gets on his wheel, but they're like 5-6 back, and they come around that corner, and at the corner is when Holtz takes off.
Right.
He goes from the corner and just barely, and he and John drag race that to the finish, which is a beautiful sprint for both of those guys. I mean, that's the kind John is really good at, not the pop 150. And I personally was very impressed by both of those guys in the sprint, and Jeff to get third there. And Josh Carling, Josh Wood, both very good sprinters. You know, that's just too far, I guess, for them. They need to, but they had guys to sit on. I don't know. It was interesting.
Right. And then 12 guys in the break. So Chris Espy took the field sprint for 13th place.
Touchstone.
Right. So they had a good performance there as well.
Who's leading the bar bat for 35s right now? You know any idea?
I think I looked it up and I saved that, and I'm just going to hold on to that for the year, because I think we've got bar and bat for 35-1-2-3.
Right. And I don't think it's, I think John, Jeff, and then Ryan was 17th. So pretty good there. Really, really happy with how that race went. And also just to make a comment of, you know, like I said, Zimney's up there. So his idea is, I'm going to use this guy, which is what you've got to do. I mean, that's pretty smart racing. But it also shows us getting another guy in that break. And my attitude with John is sprinting is, look, these people, and it should be your way in life, in a sense of some other people have their plans, but those plans may not work for our advantage the best. So you don't always get a play off of them. Sometimes it helps you, sometimes it doesn't. But if you go in there, and John had that ability of like, I'm not going to worry about what this guy's doing. I'm going to be leading Jeff out, and we're just going to do our own thing.
Right.
And
yeah.
Plays out to the well, because you know it's so interesting. I've done exactly what Zimney. I'm getting on this guy. He's good, and maybe he has a bad day, or he's not the one. And then you're like, God, that's
it's tough when you put your eggs in somebody else's basket.
So. And nothing against Zimney. Zimney, you know, good job getting in the break. I know his chain dropped off and stuff too as well. So, really fun day racing. Then we had the 45s. That was, I believe, time wise before our race.
Yes.
And it looks like we got a repeat from last year.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, I know Jason took the win.
Top step, at least.
Okay. Yeah, he and Joe Starin got in a break and stayed away. Rick Reinhart won the field sprint for third. Jason's been on the show before, Thirsty Bear. Joe Starin also with Touchstone, and Rick on a new team this year, Race for Research, Make-A-Wish. So good performance there. I know, having talked to Jason quite a bit, he likes the course, knows it's good for a breakaway, and that definitely suits his racing strength, so... he definitely played his cards well and got a good result.
Yes. So, you know, congrats to Jason there. The P12, well, first of all, the women. So we had a women's 3-4-5. It looks like they ended up getting 21 women in the field. Rachel Barada from Davis wins. Christy Hoffman of Davis in second. Fnu Novita gets third. So they ended up with a decent amount for that. But they didn't have enough for the P12 women. So what they did is they ran them actually with the men. And so two of the women raced with the men. I guess they scored them separately. Sawyer Taylor, Jack Rue, and then Rachel again, Berta, Davis Bike Club, 1-2 there. So let's get to the men's 1-2-3 race.
So this was a pretty active race. I did a lot of sitting on the back just so I could get some fitness in and just utilize it as a workout. By the time this race started, I was pretty well tired. But I mean, at the end of the day, Matt Chat took the win with Jeff Linder coming in second place and Anthony Ferretti coming in third. I think it's Matt Michael's video. He starts the lead out, and you can see that there's a huge gap between the top three riders and the next set of guys that come through. So those three spinners just had a great launch pad coming out of the last corner to go 1-2-3.
Right. And Matt, it was, I did a lead out for Novikov last year, and got caught on, Bagley's camera.
Yeah.
And ours was just a little bit later than when Matt and Michael did it. Similar type of thing. The difference was when I came around the corner, I was able to sprint a little bit more for him, because the problem you had there, I mean, first of all, if you watch that, it's amazing because it splits the three.
Right.
And then you have Chatlong just launches, and his kick is so good to begin with that if you watch Linder's video, he's got to close it down, and it's a close finish.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I thought it played out great for Linder and them, but you know, you are going against Chat, who's told me he's almost up to 2,000 watts for a sprint now. So.
Wow. He's almost up there with Jason Smith.
Right.
Got some room to grow. But it's also great for Matt. It's first race with his new team. He's on Mike's bikes now, and it's good for him to notch the first win of the season for those guys.
I told him during the race, I said, this is the most professional gear-wise you've looked in years.
Nice.
Because he did look nice. That yeah. new bike, you know, and everything.
Definitely.
So anything's a note in there? I mean, I was very impressed with those top three. Those guys rode really smart and good the whole day. It was good to see.
No, little observations. A few minutes into the race, Josh Carling had a near disastrous incident where it looks like he got his front wheel caught in somebody's derailleur.
Did you see it on Linder's video?
I saw it on Linder's video. I saw it in real life. It was impressive to see him keep hold that upright. Right. I mean, that's good bike skills there. So it was good to see him, you know, go through that and then get a wheel and get right back in the race and still come up with a decent result.
So I'm just going to point out some of these top here. Chatlong, Jeff Linder, Tarun, Anthony Ferretti of A-Main, Gavin Murray, Mark Pro, Timmy Bauer getting a good, and there was a big split from third to fourth.
Yeah.
SP2 Life, Isaiah Oliver, really good result for him. He was right up there in front. Josh Carling, SP2 Life, Fernando Padilla, Scott Cohen, really rounding out the top 10 of the Davis Bike Club. I actually expected Scott a little higher, but you know.
Yeah, I think Isaiah is now also tied to the SP2 Life team. So that's good for them.
They just don't have their new kits.
Three guys in the top 10 is darn impressive.
Any last thoughts of the racing this weekend besides the fact that our team just went out on top? I mean, I was really proud of John and actually Ryan as well and Jeff.
It was, I think the good thing is the weather was probably a good contributor, but it was good to see the field sizes as big as they were for this early in the season. I think I ran a tally and there was like 415 total registered racers, so that's good to see.
Right, right. Okay, things that make you go, Things that make you go, What do you got for us?
So there was an article in Cycling News today, kind of as a little teaser, so to speak, leading into the Giro, and I guess Chris Froome is now kind of spreading word to the various outlets that, you know, the Giro is really well suited for Geraint Thomas this year. It'd make a lot of sense for him to go and race that. It's like, well, Bernal's already tagged as the team leader for that race this year, and you know Froome wants to be the leader for the team at the Tour, so if he can kind of eliminate competition internally by setting them up in a different race, then it's like, I guess it's in his benefit to do that. It just seems kind of sneaky for him to do that. And what would set it up better for Thomas than it would for Froome? It seems like it'd be really well suited for Froome. He should go
right.
race it.
Well, he won last year.
Right.
And it's interesting that I saw Dumoulin say, oh, you know what? I'd love to do the Tour, but this Giro, they released the route. And he's like, this is what's suited for me. So this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And yeah. For me, just the kind of the, I have nothing to think about. I just don't have anything. Maybe the reg at the race last weekend. It was really good to see. So there's nothing really to think about there, though. I don't know. That's what I have. Okay, this week we have, and I'm sorry, I'm not feeling well, so a little tough talking here. But Folsom Crit, we got that going tomorrow. The Bump, maybe we'll do a preview of those. Well, I'll try to maybe do a live stream tonight. I doubt it. But we'll get a overall post-race of those ones. And
yeah, weather's going to be crappy. That's evident. So, you know, it's just a little bit of riding in the rain. Both races are solid races. So I think it'd be in everybody's interest to get out there and do it.
Right.
Yeah.
So you got that Cherry Pie coming up, Snelling, Merced, Chico, everything. So
Chico registration is, I think, open end of March. Great race.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Winners and losers. What do you got for that, Chris?
I'm going to go with myself as a winner. It's not that often I get to pat myself on the back. So when we were kind of talking behind the scenes just in text, I made some picks for Cal Aggie and I pretty much nailed all of them. So I'm happy with myself for being able to size up. You want to
remind us what those are?
I believe I picked Matchat. I picked Novikov. I was really close in the threes. I picked Jonah Kellogg. I wasn't expecting a late attack by Ryan. Jonah got second, so I think that's a pretty darn close call. So,
well, I did pick us for the Masters 35. I said that, so.
Well done. A pat on your back.
Right. And what about your loser?
Loser is, I just kind of feel bad for Quickstep's new sponsor, Dusenik. It's, you know, you're coming into your first big race of the season with this Tour of San Juan, and you know, your name's kind of getting dragged along with this whole Ilio Keys thing, and it's difficult to really have inspiration and want to stick around with that for another season when your introduction to cycling is this kind of behavior and your name getting attached to it.
Right.
So it's definitely a bummer for them, and it sounds like they may have leveraged their position to squeeze Lefebvre a little bit. So.
Good. And it makes it difficult for new you know, new sponsors come in the next time.
Definitely, like, oh, yeah.
What kind of frat boy, you know, kind of culture do you run here?
Right.
But that's what it is. Winners for me, it was the Cal Aggie. Great weather, good day of racing. There was only one wreck that I saw.
Yes.
Something to go down, Matt Axford. I hope he's doing okay. I was talking to him afterwards, and he seemed to be okay. He was all bandaged up. But, you know, besides that, it looked like a pretty safe day. Good for everybody. I would like to have seen more women out there, especially the upper echelon of them.
Right. Yeah. Only having two was kind of a bummer.
Right. As far as loser, it's just me and my health. I was sick going into the race. I'm still effing fighting this shit, and it's not
fun. I just hope I don't get sick.
I know. We'll sanitize as well. You as soon as we're done here.
Please do.
Anyway, anything else to close this out?
No, it's... I'm just feeling more... looking forward to racing more than I thought I would, so I'm happy with that.
I will say this last weekend was, for us, you know, we did well,
right.
So it was inspirational. I felt much better in the Pro 1, 2, 3, 4 race. So physically, I felt a little better, and right, it pumped me up. I'm too bad to just, you know, and then a lot of the post-race stuff, we had, you know, a lot of these videos coming out from everybody, yeah. Which is awesome to see. It's also interesting to, you know, I listened to the Trainer Road podcast, and the one guy was, you know, Jonathan, I think he did the threes and did two races, and they're asking him how he did. And he's like, oh, I think I was sixth in this one and like 12th in this one. Well, he wasn't. And that's nothing against him. I'm just saying, when you have videos in your cameras,
right?
Everything, like Nate Pearson was talking about his race, and he was going through it, and he obviously watched, so he can break things down. Cause sometimes you think, oh, this is what I did. And then you get in the moment and you're like, oh, actually, on video. That's why I put a thing out about cornering, and some of that was just maybe a declaration here. It wasn't to rip on anybody.
Yeah.
It wasn't even to vent. It was just to kind of show what you can do when there's gaps, how you can kind of move ahead. And then to, if you see someone doing something bad, maybe that's on you. All right. Anything else?
No. I think that covers it pretty well. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in again.
Yeah. Happy to do it.
Yeah, you bet. So, Episode 98, Between Two Wheels Podcast. Thanks again. Check us out. Go to our YouTube page. Subscribe to the little notification bell so you can tell if we're going to do any live things. Same with our Facebook page. That's kind of where we're putting some things out. We even have Instagram, B2W_podcast. Give us some of your feedback. We will definitely try to include it in here as we did this week. And once again, good luck out there racing. Let us know if you have any. Let us know how you did. You know, one of the guys said he finished mid-pack. That's a high synth guy. I don't know who he is. So let me also know who you are. Once again, take care. Late. See you, Kurt.